And so I'm happy to get this thing going. So I am really relaying messages that I received not 30 seconds ago. So I'll do the best I can, and I may make mistakes, and Andrea is back there, so she'll help me stay on track. In any event, from what I am advised, the agenda is as follows. There's 5 minutes for the chair and vice chair. Oh, that's me and the...
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. That's proof positive that I just got the information. Okay, so there'll be 5 minutes for the chairman and vice chairman, the remarks on the purpose of the briefing. Okay, I don't think I'll take 5 minutes, but the chair who's not here may have explained when she gets here. Then there's 30 minutes for panel number one. And the way it'll go is the chair of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands Commission, Joby Masagatani, will have 10 minutes, followed by Robin Danner of the SHA for 10 minutes, and then followed by David Kimo Franco of NHLC for 10 minutes. The topics are as follows. For Ms. Masagatani, current data on all non-homesteading land dispositions. For Ms. Danner, purposes of land dispositions under HHCA and Kumu Camp. And then for Mr. Franco, the Nelson case as it relates to non-homesteading lands. Then that will be followed by 35 minutes of panel number two, invited testimony on land disposition experience with Department of Hawaiian Homelands. We'll begin with Department of Hawaiian Homelands for 15 minutes, Kalailoa Raceway Park, Mr. Grace and Mr. Cox for 15 minutes total, I'll make that clear. And then Kumu Camp for 5 minutes, Ms. Lorraine Raposo. Then there'll be a Q&A by the committee, deliberation of committee resolution, and closing remarks. The last thing I was told is that Andrea behind me will give you a one minute remaining. Yep. So there it is.
And then
I guess they'll wrap it up. This is a strict committee this year, so we'll try to keep to the schedule. Yes, Uncle Joe, you have a question?
Is there a time for a commissioner to talk?
You know, that's best answered by the chair who will be here, and we'll ask her that question. It's not on the agenda, so I don't want to take license off her agenda, but I suspect that she'll have an answer. Okay, that's the best answer I can give you. Okay.
You're only following
now. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, yeah. Okay, so we ho'omaka, yeah? So the first 5 minutes, evidently for the chair and vice chair remarks on the purpose of the briefing. Well, the chair's not here. She's stuck in traffic. Let me just tell you my understanding of the briefing. There have been issues that have been brought to bear, which included the audit, and which also have included a series of front page articles. Usually, my recollection is usually on a Sunday by the Star Advertiser, which has raised a lot of concerns. In addition, there are individual members of the Senate, I am one of them, who has received concerns about projects that have to do with Department of Hawaiian Homelands. In my particular case, one issue had to do with KIUC on a HOLA project, KIUC PV project. Another issue that was brought to me was the Albizia project, and another issue was the Kumukep project. And then there have been other issues that I understand the chair has been advised on regarding concern that had to do with a raceway park. And she probably has been inundated with other issues as the lead Senate member of the committee. My understanding is we're going to discuss these issues as she has laid out. It appears to me, just from what I have had briefly with the chair, one issue has to do with the propriety of funds used inappropriately in light of the Nelson case. So this is a great opportunity to talk about the impact of the Nelson case and what it means in terms of going forward and what it doesn't mean in terms of the budget of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. In a nutshell, the Supreme Court found that the damages as a result of Nelson were such that the income stream could not be used for administrative purposes. Okay? So, that's the kind of briefing that we'll try to find out. And if there are areas that need to be clarified, need to be corrected, or need to be restructured going forward, then we'll do so at the committee level. But one of the things I guess you'll need to help us with is if the budget is sufficient or insufficient from the administrator's perspective, and if it's insufficient, to articulate the deficiencies. Okay, so we'll start with panel number one, the Director of Department of Hawaiian Homelands, Jovi Masagatani, for 10 minutes, followed by Robin Danner for 10 minutes, followed by David Kimofranco for 10 minutes on your issues at hand. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Jovi. Good morning, Vice Chair. Members of the committee, Senator Solomon, Senator Phelan. Since time is very short, we're going to go very quickly through this presentation. I think some of it will be very familiar with you. Our understanding was to provide an overview in terms of the land data on our disposition, so getting started right away. For Hawaiian Homelands, next slide, please. Of a total of 203,000 acres, about 40,000 of them is in homestead leasing. The remaining 163,500 is under the Land Management Division's management. Next slide. The Land Management Division deals with general leases, licenses, and revocable permits. Other areas requiring special attention, such as cliffs and drainages, conservation areas, and areas that are, you know, pending development when resources are available.
Let me interrupt you just one second.
Sure.
One of the members of the Senate had asked if this camera could be in front of us. I don't know whose camera this is.
Oh, that's mine.
Yeah, could you accommodate us? Well, let's see. Maybe put it there and shoot it this
okay.
way.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Thank you for assisting us.
In terms of the 160...
Okay, thank you, Jovi.
Please, in terms of the 100, thank you, Senator. In terms of the 163,500 acres that are under the Land Management Division's management, and these are the lands that are not encumbered by homestead lease, 50,000 of that, or 24.57%, are in the Aina Mauna Legacy Program. This is primarily located in Humu'ula and is a conservation preservation program. There is some revenue generated from that. Our general leasing, 127, covers 1.37% of our acreage and generates the bulk of our revenues from our available land. So that's about $10.6 million from general leases. Licenses, 417 accounts, less than 1% of our lands, $841,000 in income. And revocable permits, which is primarily a short-term land management tool, does generate some revenues. About $2.7 million, covering about 19% of our lands. The vast majority of our lands still remain unencumbered, over 70,000 acres. These are big acreage, such as in South Point, the Waimanalo Cliffs, Waimea Kauai, etc. We do the best that we can to manage those resources, and in part, the revocable permit program is something that helps us in terms of, you know, managing those resources cost effectively. When we talk about revenue generation, can you skip forward? Yeah, sorry. No, the other way.
Backwards.
Yeah, back to the... When we talk about revenue generation while Daryl's getting there, basically our our non-homesteading lands are used for two principal purposes. One is to generate revenues for the trust, and this is to address the purposes under the Act. As you know, there are four constitutional purposes: lot development, loans, rehabilitation programs, and administration and operations. The first three are left to this body to determine what is sufficient. So for the trust to have those resources to fund programs in the event that the legislature's definition of sufficiency is less than the commission's is really critical. In addition, the second pot that we utilize are non-homesteading dispositions, licenses principally, and leases, is to deal with community development for our homestead communities. Within the general leasing program, of the 127 general leases, 96 or 76% generate the bulk of the revenue. 85 of these are industrial, 6 are commercial, 3 are resort, and 2 are alternative energy. Next slide. Having some technical difficulties. When you look at the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, the framers did anticipate that lands that were not available for homesteading could be used for revenue generation, and explicitly allows for this within the HHCA, subject to the Chapter 171, which also governs leasing of public lands, such as at DLNR. In 1978, the Constitutional Convention included the ability to provide a preference to Native Hawaiians, that DHHL, the department, could negotiate prior to the negotiation with the general public a disposition of a lease of Hawaiian homelands to a Native Hawaiian or organizations or associations owned or controlled by Native Hawaiians. This preference, next slide please. In September 24th, 1981, the Hawaiian Homes Commission did adopt a general leasing policy that did make this preference operational. And it did indicate that land should be made available to qualified Native Hawaiians or qualified Native Hawaiian organizations before making it available to the general public. In October of 2001, almost 20 years later, the Hawaiian Homes Commission rescinded this Native Hawaiian general leasing policy that had been adopted in 1981. The reason for this rescission, there are several. Principally, this preference policy, it was told by the commission, exposed the trust to serious risks of lawsuit and litigation by those that were challenging the constitutionality of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, aka the Barrett lawsuits and others like that. The second thing was the provision did not allow for the ability for DHHL to lease to small land Native Hawaiians, our beneficiaries, at rates that were below market rent. So there really was no economic benefit. In addition, the application of this preference policy, the belief was the intent was to increase the number of Native Hawaiians with commercial leases on the homelands. But in fact, after 20 years of applying the policy, in 1981, you had 7% of general leases going to Native Hawaiians, and exactly the similar proportion in 2001. So, next slide. Two additional reasons. There was a concern that national and international tenants that could bring higher returns to the trust for very attractive properties were discouraged from bidding on our leases at that time. And in addition, the feeling was that there may be other methods that could support Native Hawaiian businesses, you know, technical assistance, financial assistance, all of those kinds of things, so that they were more competitive in the bidding process. So for all of those reasons, the policy was rescinded. In terms of our general leases, these are the principal methods that we use to get our lands out into general leasing. 171-59, which is a competitive process going to the highest bidder. 220.5, which also mirrors 171-60, which has to do with a competitive process going out to the best proposal. We can also direct negotiate. These are the ones we principally use. But in direct negotiation, those are for public utilities and renewable energy producers. And then for those activities that we put general leasing and licenses out for the purpose of supporting community development, we can direct negotiate with an Ilia Mastinari organization per 171-43.1. Is that a computer slow? Yeah. In addition to our general leasing, we do have a licensing program. The Hawaiian Homes Commission Act does authorize the Hawaiian Homes Commission, the Department of Hawaiian Homelands, to issue licenses, 417 total as of June 30th, earning over $841,000. This is principally for utility easements, for railroads, telephones, electrical power, etc. For For public purposes such as churches, hospitals, public schools, post offices, and other public improvements for public purposes, and for theaters, garages, service stations, markets, stores, and other mercantile establishments, all of which shall be owned by Native Hawaiians or organizations owned and controlled by Native Hawaiians. I just want to take a second to talk about mercantile licenses because I know that this can be an area of different perspectives. From our understanding and talking to council, when you talk about mercantile license, we actually have to look at the specific examples that are listed in the statute, which include the list there, you know, the garages, the stores, service station, markets, etc. Black's Law defines mercantile as of or relating to merchants or trading, and merchants as one whose business is a buying and selling of goods for profit. So these mercantile licenses are primarily used for stores, for business establishments, which were in homestead communities, because, as you know, our act is over 90 years old. That's principally what the mercantile licenses were used for. Next slide. And it finally, the Section 207 allows for the department to grant licenses to the United States for different purposes. For DHHL, our administrative rules allow for two kinds of licenses, a benefit license. Essentially, this allows us to provide a license at a nominal fee if it benefits a homestead organization or homestead beneficiaries or exclusively servicing Hawaiian homelands. Okay, next slide. And then with non-benefit license, the main thing is that these fees are established by appraisal or negotiated by conducting in-house appraisal. This just reinforces that, again, we have two purposes that we use our non-homesteading lands for. One is for revenue generation, and the other is to support our homestead communities. We have several, of all of the licenses that we have, you know, a handful, the vast majority are for, you know, for the purposes, revenue generation and other purposes. But we do provide for licenses and leases that go to homestead organizations. Within our license, we provide 56 to nonprofits and 18 to homestead organizations. And within our general leases, 8 to nonprofits and 7 to homestead organizations. I wanted to spend a minute, and that's what I have left, on this Kulia program, which provided community and economic development grants to support community-based economic development. It was a program that was started during Mike Akane's administration, and the intention was to provide one parcel for community purposes and one parcel for economic development purposes. Unfortunately, we no longer have this program in terms of financial funding, but this was a program in which Kumu Camp was brought forward, and these were the other dispositions that were provided under the Kulia program. As you notice, in every case, most of them are in long-term dispositions. Papakulea Community Development Corporation right now is under a right of entry, looking at the due diligence work to bring their economic and community development component forward. They also have a license right now to a community center. In the case of Kumu Camp was a very different kind of project. They actually came forward with a request for a revocable permit, which is pending because there are some issues of compliance with the letter of conditions. But we are working with Kumu Camp to get those issues addressed and clarified, to bring those compliance forward so the project can move forward. But we did want to let you know that this Kumu Camp program was a part of a larger Kulia program that specific intention was about community and economic development for that region. For that, because of that, we would like to invite this committee to come to Anuhola at the department's request so they can hear the concerns and interests and support of that community as it relates to Anuhola. That was to Kumu Camp. That was a concern that we were hearing from our beneficiaries with regard to this particular briefing. With revocable permits, I have just too much slides. Principally to indicate that our revocable permit program is intended for short-term use. It's not a competitive disposition. Primarily, it can go out as a non-compete, direct negotiate. Next slide. And is a disposition that is not used just by DHHL, but also used by Department of Transportation and Department of Agriculture. With this, many of the issues that were highlighted in the paper were issues that actually this administration inherited, but we're working very hard to address those, and I believe we'll be addressing that in the second part of the presentation, and I'm going to reserve the balance of my time for my deputy, who actually is assigned to deal with the issues of the revocable permit.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Director.
Senator.
Next, we will hear from Robin Danner of the Shaw. And the topic is purposes of land disposition under Hawaiian Homes Commission Act and Kumu Camp. Robin? Thank you.
Aloha, Senator, Vice Chair.
Aloha.
Members of the committee, good morning. For me, this is a really tremendous day in the history of the Hawaiian Homeland Trust because in 1959, our new state government did make a compact with the federal government, and you did make a compact with the beneficiaries of the Hawaiian Homes Commission. The Hawaii Admissions Act approved by Congress made the new state take administrative responsibility of our land trust and take responsibility for beneficiaries of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act under the oversight of the Department of Interior. Since that time, as beneficiaries, we have been left to the whims of a state agency with little to no oversight by you, the state legislature, or the Federal Department of Interior. And without your oversight, we have not fared very well. Even your own state auditor, decade after decade, has reported the woeful condition of our trust. Today gives me awesome, great hope. Because as beneficiaries, we are here with you and this committee, and we are here with DHHL. Last year, I had the great honor to have an invitation and the chance to speak directly to President Obama about our 93-year-old federal land trust. We requested that he direct his Department of Interior to increase the federal oversight of our land trust that our beneficiaries had waited to be done for 93 years, nine decades. Within 3 months of our visit with him, the President approved our request, and within a few months this year, beneficiaries will, for the first time, interact with the Department of Interior to promulgate federal rules that will not change when administrations change at DHHL. Today, for me, is a very new beginning where leadership in the Senate, the State Senate, begins the legislative session with an informational briefing on the land dispositions of our trust. If this can become a tradition every year, what we are doing this morning, then I believe, like President Obama is doing at the federal level, you, senators, will be doing at the state level, delivering on the compact made 55 years ago. DHHL, no matter its leadership, needs federal oversight and needs your oversight. We, as beneficiaries, need your oversight. I'd like to spend my limited time on the topic that Senator Shimabukuro requested information on, which is a review of the land priorities of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, not seen through the eyes of the state, but just plainly what is in the federal law. Very simple interpretation. Number one, in reality, the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act is not a very long law. This is it right here. It's 25 sections, with really four or five sections that speak to the heart of its purpose. Likewise, the administrative rules adopted in 1998 are also not that long. In short, it's not as complex as people would pretend that it is. The trust is in turmoil and mismanaged because governor by governor, director by director, deputy by deputy, can't seem to stay true to us, the beneficiaries, to the intent of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. Over the years, state government has, these are good people, but they have come to treat our land trust as if it belongs to them, as if it belongs to the state, treating our lands as if beneficiaries are mere bystanders, where our lands are to be used to benefit non-beneficiaries and to generate revenue to cover state government salaries. This could not be further from the truth. Even the Hawaii Supreme Court has weighed in to say a'ole through the Nelson case. There are four basic, simple land uses across these boards that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act really makes sense when you look at it in totality. The first, everyone is most knowledgeable about, farthest left, 207 covers homesteading by and for beneficiaries for homes, ranches, and farms. Mistakenly, everyone thinks this is all the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act's intended to do, give Hawaiians a home, a ranch, or a farm, and pow. The rest of the land can do whatever's. But Section 207, to the next slide, goes on. It lays out a supportive priority, or to the third slide there, for what any community would need, what our communities of homes, farms, and ranches would need. We would need churches and schools and nonprofits to deliver on social and economic needs. And then Section 207, staying within the very same section, moves to the second highest priority for beneficiaries, which is the second slide. So darn obvious, but nearly completely ignored decade after decade, the issuance of lands to Native Hawaiians for commerce, business, and mercantile. 201.7b is absolutely clear. In addition to land being issued to Hawaiians for homesteading, under the first slide, it then says land is due to be distributed to Native Hawaiians and Native Hawaiian organizations for business and economic development. 207 is the heart of the intent of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. Homestead lands for Hawaiians, then nonprofit lands, and then business lands for Hawaiians. It makes total sense, yet administration after administration fails such a sensible plan. The last and lowest priority of our land is found under Section 204, all the way to the end. Last and lowest. It essentially says that if there are lands not needed for homesteading, for the first one, it says in there it can be used by non-beneficiaries, by the general public, via open bid, as director stated. But it also says very clearly the word provided. Lawyers know what provided means. You can do XYZ provided that DHHL can negotiate directly with Native Hawaiians, Native Hawaiian organizations for the land before the general public. The Commission Act is very clear. Hawaiians, public purpose, and then the general public, but still Hawaiians get a last chance to get their land because it's about housing, farming and ranching, and business. When you step back and embrace the totality of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, land for Hawaiian homesteading, land for public purpose that supports homesteading, and then land for Hawaiian business, one can see where the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act has always wanted the land trust to go. But we can see where the federal law intended you to place our lands. Now, let's look at where our trust lands have actually gone. Now we know where Kuhio wanted it to go. Let's look at where it's actually gone. According to DHHL's most recent annual report, there are 729 land instruments issued for uses other than the first slide. For these last three, that's 729 land dispositions to either a nonprofit public purpose use, a Native Hawaiian mercantile use, or to the least priority of them all, to the general public for revenue generation. Of these 729, there exists maybe one, but zero since 1998, to Native Hawaiians for mercantile. There's maybe 45 under the supportive one to beneficiary-controlled nonprofits. And there's well over 650 to non-beneficiary general public lessees. That's 4% for Hawaiians of our own land and 96% in non-beneficiary hands. The trust is failing beneficiaries because the trust has land dispositions upside down. According to the annual report, 66,000 acres of our 200,000 acres, that's nearly a third of our lands are issued under the lowest priority to the general public. Only 20% or 40,000, as Director Masakatani stated, are issued under homesteading. But the worst reality is practically none are issued to Hawaiians for mercantile and business purposes, the second highest priority for the Commission Act. The bottom line, our lands are not being issued to its intended beneficiary. Why? Why no mercantile lands to Hawaiians? Why no general leases directly negotiated with Hawaiians before the public? Why so much of our Hawaiian land to non-Hawaiians? Leadership matters. Policy matters. Oversight matters. In 2001, a director and a deputy director that happens to be this director decided to ignore federal law, and I provided for you that memo, to just ignore Section 207 on mercantile and to ignore the administrative rules on the books on how to negotiate with Hawaiians under Section 204 before the general public. Ignored it. That is why we are in trouble. DHHL took it upon themselves to advise the Hawaiian Homes Commission without oversight by DOI, without oversight by you, the legislature, to obliterate mercantile and business land rights of beneficiaries, to essentially violate the law. I cannot say that more clearly. That's how we got to a land trust for Hawaiians that issues more land to non-Hawaiians than the beneficiaries it belongs to. With the examples that will be shared today in the next panel, including the experience of one of the Shaw Member Homestead Associations on Kauai, where three different projects have been major struggles to work with DHHL, even given that verbatim language up there, I think it becomes clear that my testimony about DHHL refusing to embrace licensing lands under Section 207 and under Section 204 is exactly as the 2001 memorandum suggested. To ignore and not allow to the greatest extent possible beneficiaries and beneficiary organizations that are eleemosynary, as defined in 171, to get lands issued to them. DHHL either follows a policy of retribution, awarding only to lessees it likes and thwarting those it does not, singling out and forcing on some, but not on all. And I think the examples, even with the racetrack, will show that. Or it follows a policy of denial of the rights of beneficiaries because it wrongfully wants to use our lands to fund government operations. It's one or the other or both. It's hard to hear, it's hard to say. Senators, you have a chance to change the future, to stop repeating the past 93 years, oversee land dispositions every year through a hearing like this, make them tell you who they gave land to the previous year. Follow Kuhio, follow the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, and you will turn the ship right side up for the next generation of beneficiaries. It's too late for many of us, but it's never too late for the next generation. God bless, mahalo.
Thank you, Robert. Next, we'll hear from David Kimo Frankel from Native Hawaiian Legal Corporation. Relating to the Nelson case and non-homesteading lands.
Aloha.
Good morning.
The Nelson case arose because the Hawaiian Homes Commission voted to lease about 200 acres of Hawaiian homelands for a timeshare project in Kona. That was in conjunction with a project that I know that, part of the same project that Senator Thielen is familiar with, because there was state land adjoining. The state land was to be used for a marina. The Hawaiian homelands was for a timeshare. The sole reason used to justify the commercial leasing of homelands was to raise revenue. Revenue that the state was constitutionally obligated to provide to DHHL. This same land could have been made available to Native Hawaiians for homesteading. Obviously, if it was appropriate for timeshare use for people out of state, it would be appropriate for Native Hawaiians to live on. During the course of the Nelson case, the commission agreed in a form of a stipulation that prior to leasing or otherwise disposing of Hawaiian homelands, the Hawaiian Homes Commission will be required and is required now to make findings that the land is not required for homesteading purposes. That's a provision, as Robin pointed out, of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. We believe that it'll be very difficult for the commission to ever conclude that lands are not required for homesteading, given first the exponential increase in the wait list that's been going on for a while. Secondly, the more than three decades wait that over 1,600 Native Hawaiians have had to wait, and the more than two-decade wait by more than 8,000 applicants. Given this demand, it's hard for the department to ever justify leasing out Hawaiian homelands to others.
The question was, just for a break. Is your testimony submitted?
No, we did not submit
okay,
it.
Okay, right. Okay. Okay, please proceed.
Sure. The Hawaii Supreme Court concluded that, at a minimum, the state is obligated to provide a sufficient amount of general revenue to pay for the Department of Hawaiian Homeland's administrative and operating budget. General leases are no longer to be used to pay for DHHL's administrative operating costs. That does not mean that the state is not obligated to provide sufficient sums of money for other purposes, such as the development of homesteads. That constitutional obligation still exists. It's just that particular obligation is not judicially enforceable. Finally, our office is aware of leases in which the terms have expired or will be expiring that are suitable for homesteading. Instead of extending the terms of these leases to corporations for ranching purposes, for example, the commission should make these lands available to Native Hawaiians now. That's all we have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right. I just wanted to clarify what the chair's intent was. We'll move right into panel two. Invited testimony on land disposition experience with DHHL, Department of Hawaiian Homelands, followed by Kalailoa Raceway Park, followed by Kumu Camp. The time limits are 15 minutes, 15 minutes, and 5 minutes, respectively.
Senator He and members of the committee, my name is Darrell Young. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. I'm the one that's tasked with bringing the RPs into compliance. And so let me just go over really quickly a brief history and then how we got to where we are. As you alluded to, that there was news coverage that began in May that highlighted some deficiencies in our program. When those deficiencies were highlighted, we issued an immediate 60 to 90 day moratorium in order for us to review where we are and then see how we can correct that program. In addition, the governor created an assessment committee to assist us in the review, and we're just eagerly awaiting their recommendations sometime soon so we can take it back to the commission for their vetting and then taking it public for the public to weigh in. All 182 revocable permits that we had at the time were allowed to expire as of June 30th, and an interim process was approved by our commission in July to allow us to use transitional rights of entries to review each document, redraft each document into a right of entry so that we can look at the uses and all other special conditions that ran with the revocable permits. So in October, after about a three-month process in doing all that paperwork and creating the new agreements, we were pleased to say that about 82% of our revocable permits at the time were able to be successfully transitioned into rights of entries. 9 of them were canceled or were surrendered to us, and the remaining 24 RP holders, or 13% of our total base, were found to be non-compliant and were given until November 29th to remedy all the outstanding violations. In our review, we found that the most common things in areas of non-compliance on the revocable permits were either delinquent rent under utility payments. They either expanded their boundary without approval by the department, or they cleared lands that they didn't have approval to do. They had either unpermitted or unauthorized buildings on the premises. Some of them had actually used the revocable permits for residential use. They had other businesses that, other than what they had told us they were going to have there, unauthorized stores and or insufficient insurance coverage. So since that time, we were able to update our commission twice, once in December and once in January, and we're pleased to say that a majority of the 24 non-compliant entities have worked to bring their operations into compliance. These entities have either offered to work with DHHL to either come up with a settlement plan or surrender the property back to the department. With regard to Save Our Racetracks, or SORT, they were issued revocable permit 411 on August of 2007. It's for 30 acres in Kalailoa, and the purpose was for construction, operation, and management of various types of racetracks for various types of wheeled vehicles, Education and training in safety and legal forms of vehicular racing may also take place on the property. And for the 38 acres, they were charged $2,000 a month plus utilities. Within the revocable permit, there were two special conditions that were put in there, and I'll get further on in my presentation. I'll explain why I'm highlighting these two. Special condition C talks about the use of the premise shall comply with all governmental laws, including but not limited to obtaining permits for grubbing and clearing the site. And special condition F, the permittee may only import materials such as, but not limited to, dirt, rock, gravel, compost, sand, etc., in reasonable quantities, but prior to importing or stockpiling such material, the permittee shall provide permitter with certification or other evidence showing that the material is free of contamination. Some of the confusion on this issue tends to center on this one letter that was written by former Chair Michael Connie to then DPP Director Henry Eng. And in it, it contained this one sentence which says, SOAR has informed us that the city has questioned the necessity of a grading permit, which SOAR has been trying to obtain, so that it can proceed with removing vegetation and grading a dirt racetrack on the site. If within the next 20 days the city does not inform us otherwise, we will assume that the city is supportive of SOAR's efforts and has waived grading permit requirements. What we find in reviewing the record is that sometime on February 8th, Chair Kane did meet or did discuss on the phone with the representative of SOAR the need to have compliance with the city rules. On February 26th, in response to a complaint, the land manager or the land agent at that time informed SOAR of the complaint. On March 8th, that complaint was written and documented, and we sent them a letter that said they need to stop all operations until these following conditions were met. And the conditions were that the soils report needed to be filed with DHHL showing that there was no contamination, that they provide DHHL with a grading plan showing the location and quantities of dirt needed for the racetrack before continuing, and that they obtain stockpiling and grading permits from the city and county of Honolulu. And again, on April 15th, we sent them a letter reiterating the conditions. So to give you an idea of the amount of dirt that was imported, the pile of dirt is actually on the back end of the property. And to give you another perspective, on the left-hand side where it says 2009, the date that it was taken, those wooden poles sticking up are actually telephone poles. So that gives you kind of the sense of depth and quantity. With regard to SOAR, they are our only remaining non-compliant former RP. Their non-compliance includes rent delinquency, unauthorized site grading, no insurance certificate, and non-compliance with the use provisions of the permit. So what we've been trying to do is we actually received a letter from their attorney in November disputing their non-compliance. At the same time, we received a copy of a demand letter that city had sent to SOAR for $121,000 in fines for non-compliance with the mass grade permit. On November 29th, the day that they were supposed to come into compliance, we received a complaint of a delivery of a 30-foot high mound of dirt. The city informed us at that time that they will be inspecting this and they probably will require additional non-compliance with the mass grade permit. As of December 1st, they're delinquent to us more than $20,000 in rent and more than $5,000 in utilities. On December 27th, we responded to that attorney's letter and we asked for a response and an action plan by January 6th. On December 28th, we received two other separate complaints of the hauling of more rocks and dirt to the property, and we have no mass grade permit on file. And as of today, we have not received any response from their attorney. In conclusion, all we're trying to do is seek compliance with the terms and conditions that were agreed to, that they pay their delinquent rents and utilities, that they obtain the mass grade and stockpiling permits as required by their agreements, that they cure the violations and the fines, that they strictly adhere to the terms and conditions regarding the restricted use of the parcel. And because we don't have the soils reports or the certification that the dirt being turned in is not contaminated, we have to assume that it may be tainted, and we have to ask that they remediate hydrocarbon and or any other contamination. And that concludes my remarks at this time.
We'll proceed with Mr. Grace and Mr. Cox.
Mr. Kitchens.
Aloha, good morning. My name is George Grace from Sable Walls Racetracks, or Karakpihoy. I stand there in the back of the room, even more disturbed of some of the testimony that was just provided by the agency.
Thank you.
And I can give you one example, just real quick, because it really pisses me off, and I don't mean to disrespect anyone. The photo that he showed you of the telephone pole, to give you some idea of the depth, look at the photo of the angle. He's standing on top of a bunker, looking downward. So anybody can really see that it's just more pressure, more discrimination. You know, I sit here very upset because I've been trying feverishly since since Micah left to try to work something out with the agency, because I've been grossly discriminated on, being beaten like a dog for the last few years. I've been trying to go to chairmen, to land agents, just to be continued to be discriminated. I even went to the commission because I was asked to come to the commission and bring your problem to the commission. I flew to the Big Island twice. Every time I come up, no more quorum. No more quorum for hearing my complaints. No more quorum for hearing me say, I need help. I've been beaten and I need help. Fall on deaf ears all the time. Every time. And to say they haven't heard from my attorney, I hate to be so blunt, but that's bullshit. That's really bullshit. I'm sorry. I'm angry. You know, I almost felt that today would be pointless, but because Mighty had sat with us and talked with us, and I figured I'd give it one more last try. I've been to the governor's office. I've been to everybody to help me with my situation on my discrimination and my prejudice and my abuse. And I'm ready to sue. I've been telling Hawaiian Home, I've been apologizing to Hawaiian Home people. I'm sorry. But these people get me backed against the wall. I have to sue to get this thing brought out. And I don't want to do that. I get beaten up by the media because they call me. Every time this agency gives them crap to print in a paper. I mean, come on. They advertise in the paper, through the media, that I no more insurance. That's bullshit. I get insurance. I show them my paperwork. It's not my fault that they lose my binder. But I got to fall to that. Yeah, I back in rent. You know when was the last time I got my rent bill? May of last year. They stopped sending me rent. They stopped sending me my utility bill. And I've been trying to plead with them to work this thing out with me so that we don't have to sue each other. We don't have to be at each other's throat. I'm a very patient person. I don't see nothing that nobody cannot talk about. But two people got to be willing to talk about it. I'm not one malicious person. The crap they just in display says different. The things you hear about in the media says different. You read my file, you read my paperwork, you read what I supply with you. And then you tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm a malicious person. I just want a local guy, ain't got no money, trying to make this thing work. They're holding me down with their tongue just so I give up. I've jumped every hurdle. I've done everything I could to keep this thing going. I lost credibility with our followers. I lost sponsorships because they give you an eviction notice and don't even tell me why. When I call them, they cannot tell me why they give me an eviction notice. I have to use the media, Tim Sakahara, for what find out. Why I got one eviction notice? They said, never mind. It was a mistake. That's the kind of crap I got to put up with. Yeah, Micah did give me one letter to start my project. I moved 1,500 truckloads of dirt onto their property with the permission of Hawaiian Homes. And then somebody in the community went and squawked. Then they let me move them. The dirt was given to me as a gift for our property. My plans that I gave to the agency, to the commission, what I was going to build, you could see what it was. Now, in my lease says, I'm allowed to bring in a moderate amount of material. I get 30-something acres. I brought in 26,000 cubic yards of dirt to use on my dirt-related racetrack. You spread 36,000 cubic yards of dirt over 4 acres, it's going to be this thin. That's it. After the discriminating part with Micah, they rescinded the letter. They verbally told me they rescinded the letter. They never rescinded the letter until 7 months later, which they refused to give me one copy. I had to use somebody else to go get me the copy of that letter. So, start your project today. Spend your money. Go with your plans. Hold it. This thing is in the media now. This thing is in the media, so now you gotta go get one permit. Only because it's in the media? What about my rights? As a human being, I'm being battered from this agency. Not just because of Hawaiian or I don't want off Hawaiian. That's ridiculous. I mean, I sit here today asking you guys, if you're not going to help me, help the guy going to come behind me. Something got to be done. That place is so corrupt, it's ridiculous. And like I said, I'm not trying to disrespect nobody, but if nobody going to pay attention, I've been through every ladder already. I've been through everybody to try to solve my problem. This is my last effort. I'm exhausting all my efforts right here today. If this panel not going to help me do something, help the next guy. But I'm sorry, I'm going to have to sue. I really don't like to do that. Because, yeah, I might lose, but I don't care. It's principle. I lost everything already. Only thing I never lose is hope, and I never lose my mind yet. So we're going to go to the end. I'm going to fight this to the end because I believe I right. I believe I right. And I just cannot believe the abuse that this agency can put out to anybody. Not just me. Get a lot of people with problems. They just don't know how to come forward. They're just scared to come forward. And they're not bad people. I'm sure they're okay. I mean, I knew Darryl from when he was at council with Nestor. Whatever's plaguing that building, I mean, it's bad. It's bad. And it ain't going to be just for me. It's going to be for everybody else too. I mean, you guys got, you heard importing dirt. I'm not importing dirt. I'm taking the same dirt on my property and moving them around. They came out there. Darryl and Linda came out there. I showed them my dirt. I moved these rocks here for one course. I gotta keep taking my tracks and moving them around. For example, I rent in the size of a property of an envelope, operating on the size of a stamp, because that's all I can do. Yet people in the community, they're saying that the bushes that I got from the agency get significant burial findings possible in there. We did the studies on that. We get paperwork to give forward. Who are we gonna talk to? Since Micah left, we went to the governor. Michelle Kahani was involved. She sat with us. I proved to her that nobody in Barbers Point get permits. But I gotta go get a permit. So the agency tells me, well, that's our new policy. From now on, you gotta build, you gotta follow their guidelines. Okay, alright. So I try and go get permits, everything. I cannot. The city tell me, we're not my jurisdiction. I cannot put a freaking sign up at my racetrack. Because they're telling me they're no more jurisdiction. So I'm scratching my head at the gate, thinking, I cannot go and sign up because the city no more jurisdiction. But the jackass is in there, like, give me one fine for pay because I brought in dirt. Right? So again, we get some more problems. Who do we talk to about it? Michelle was the only one that came forward and really sat and looked at everything we had. Before Michelle was our old land agent, Leolani Kini. She saw that we were right. My documents that I keep proves different. They were going to take away my land. They were going to relocate me to someplace else. All that got shot to shit. She got fired. I start all over again. Every time they change the chair, I got to start all over again. Every time they change somebody in land division, I got to start all over again.
Mr. Greaves.
Yes, sorry.
Do us one favor.
Yes.
Get reporters, get everybody on TV watching us.
Yeah.
Try to control your...
I'm trying. Believe me, okay. I'm trying.
Try harder.
I'm a real humble person.
Okay.
But, you know, to
try,
be...
Mr. Grace.
I go try.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. But, you know what I mean? This is just bad. I cannot move forward. Every time I move forward, I get a problem. Somebody get fired. Somebody get changed over. Somebody else come in, and I went to the governor for seeking help. That's like I said. That's how Michelle got involved, right? We came to a point where finally we're gonna get some resolution on this, and then her problem with the governor was its own. Then I had to start all over again. I've been to the governor's office with Bruce Copa and Joe B, talking about the same thing we're talking about. December of the year before, 2012, nothing was done. Nothing. I mean, you can ask her what if she went there. She was there. My attorney, myself, we was there. Nothing got done. That's the kind of questions I ask in this agency, the Hawaiian Homes Commission, and I don't get answers. So, I mean, they're taking my kindness for weakness. And I cannot, you can only hit one dog so many times with a stick and it won't bite.
I thank you folks so very much for having this hearing. I'm more pissed off than him. We native Hawaiian, but it doesn't seem that having Hawaiian on your birth certificate means a damn thing. I took a complaint under the request of Puni Aloha Chi to Darryl Young regarding a person that is in total compliance, FCS trucking. Everybody get illegal septic tanks in Kalailoa. Nobody get permit for this sewer. Everything is going into the ground. Talk about environmental. We got hit with a search warrant because we had Miley's tires on our racetrack for one community cleanup. They hit us with a search warrant because they said we had contaminants. They came. They found nothing in the soil. And then they came back again. They wanted us to pay $10,000 because they had to come the first time. And then they dropped it because somebody lied over there in the state. For me, I'm grateful that you folks are doing this hearing today. And Mr. Galataria, I thank you very much. And Mr. He, Miley. But you know what needs to be done, Mr. He? Mr. Galataria, Miley, call the United States Attorney General's office and the Department of Interior. Have the United States Attorney General's office bring their subpoena powers and go down to that building and do depositions and go on independent. This is worse than Bishop Estate, let me tell you. Once you can start opening the can of worms, no more can of worms, you're going to need one landfill. And you're going to get the real truth. Because these people are liars and they bullshit us. And it's going to go on another 90-something years. Come on. All we like is a little bit of respect. We have begged these people, sit down with us. But we're not rich like the Barlows. So we don't get the special meeting. But we can sit across the table and we can discuss our problem. All we get is, you know, more insurance. We can send them 50 times. We sent them the insurance policy. But this man come to there and he lie and say, we need no more insurance. That's bullshit. Why don't you people sit down with us and discuss with us? Because they don't want to. Like my brother said, we passed this racetrack already because there's other people that suffering, that cannot afford it, don't know how to come forward. We didn't know how to come forward. I had to go in there and be a little respectful to this kind man here, and he gave a good ear. Okay? And then we got Miley. But something needs to be done. We're not going to roll over and go away and disappear because it's the principle. And it's the principle about things not being done correctly. Their practices that they do there without policy is criminal. And I am asking this committee, senators, because you're not without blame now. You are senators. Go investigate Linda Chin, because I think that she needs to be fired. Every chair and deputy that comes to this agency listens to her. Yeah? You're going to see a questionnaire that I made to Michelle Kahani when I told her, why are you guys hitting us so hard with permits, permits, permits? Extreme Paintball excavate a property two times the size of us, brought in more dirt. They never have permit, and the whole time that they was battling us, Linda Chin, they got a permit. She's a bullshitter, because there's no permits. You go down to the city, we hired a special person that does permits. Nobody get permits or permission from the Department of Health to have any septic tanks, which I took pictures and I gave to Dowry Young. Where's the investigation? Why the guy not on a non-compliance list? And when I ask him about that person who's not Native Hawaiian, oh, Sabrina, we cannot go there because, you know, we got to watch out the Cayetano rice situation. And he can sit there and tell me he didn't say that. And I can prove him a liar because I recorded him. I'm tired of people's bullshit. We Native Hawaiian, we entitled to. We're at least entitled for you people to sit down and to have a discussion about what we're doing wrong. What's been doing wrong, Mr. He, is the practices and the preference.
I think we got the message.
In closing, you know, I kind of want to calm down. All we're asking for is to be treated fair. What I would like the outcome to be is that we humbly work something out. I won't give reasonable time for hear from somebody that we can sit down and we're going to give a workout plan for myself. Hear everything that I went through. I don't know how this is even going to be possible because I cannot trust nobody in that building already.
Exactly.
And you know, I almost feel like we're going to get nowhere after today. But I respect you guys here today, you senators here today, to at least hear what we have said. It is a serious thing. We're not going to go forward with trying to solve this humbly. Then I ain't got no choice but to go with my legal options. And one more thing today is that, you know, I've lost sponsorships, big sponsorships along the line because of this fight with Hawaiian Homes. Today, I have a man in the audience with me. His name is Donald Moffitt. He's willing to match $200,000 funds for fun for help us with our project. He cannot because I don't know my lease yet because I get this problem with Hawaiian Homes plaguing me. He wants to pay to asphalt so we can do some drift racing and some go-kart racing and get some of these kids off the street. Because that's what we need to do. And he cannot. His hands is just as tight as mine. We're stuck.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Yan, one more thing to say. If you senators could only speak to these commissioners one-to-one so they can speak freely without having the governor or David Louie threatening them. Or what enough to say. They would have a lot to say, sir.
Okay. Obviously, this is a long series of hearings we've been having with regarding this department, so we're trying to do the best we can.
I appreciate it.
I just have one question. Is this your insurance policy?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
So can you say for the record that we have insurance?
Well, I asked you if this is your policy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
We'd be more than happy to provide you with anything else that you need.
There'll be there'll be an engaged discussion with the members of the Senate, so we may call you back, Mr. Grace.
Thank you.
Okay. The last speaker is on Pumuka. Robin, is someone else? Oh, I'm sorry, Robin. Lorraine Raposo. I'm sorry, Robin. I just thought it was... how are you? I want to be sure we recognize you here. Okay, thank you for coming, Ate.
Good morning, everyone.
Thank you.
I'm not an articulate speaker, but I'm going to say it from my heart and honesty for what's been going on. I'm the association president for Anahola Hawaiian Homes Association. And the vice president for HCDC. And I'm here because I'm very, very angry what's been going on with us. Robin has only been with me for the past 16 years. And we were just doing nothing on homestead level because we didn't have the ability for her to help us. I want to start with this, the albizia. Are we in that? The albizia, I'm very angry with the department because Jill's and Eric Knutson came to Robin and I. They went to the department. Linda Chin, land management, didn't do anything. They came to us. And I want to say about the department on that point, and it's emotional. They didn't want it to happen. In 5 years, we would be able to put more than 100 agriculture lots on Hawaiian Homes property. They didn't want that. The department doesn't have money. Valdivia would have been the best thing on earth. The department, I think, thought it out that didn't have any money, screwed up all these years, spending all our trust money and no money. The number two thing, Kumu Camp. Robin and I were instrumental, again, with our board and everybody else, to do that because there was lots of drugs there. I live like 200 yards from Kumu Camp. I know what it's like for the past 31 years. Anahola is a very interesting site. It's a poor community. There's no economic development. We've had our kitchen built there, and then we have Kumu Camp. Again, the department is telling us, cease and desist. Robin was real gracious when she spoke earlier. I'm not. They told us that we didn't comply with anything. I was the one that used to walk to the building division, to every Department of Health and everybody. They said, Auntie Lorraine, we cannot do nothing for you. We have no jurisdiction. I'm so sick and tired of telling that to the department. Sick and tired. My time wasted. I'm not going to Robin Dana, 50 years old. I'm 70, and I had to do this all these years, begging Linda Chin, Daryl Young, all these guys I listen to, and I'm not going to say words, and I'm famous for it. They tell us, oh, you're fine, you're doing this, you're doing that. We go commissioner's meeting again. Okay, the license request to Hawaiian Homes Commission. We submitted a request to the commission to request a transition of our short-term land instrument for Kumu Camp to a 10-year license, whatever. That was in May 2012, almost 2 years ago. We're still waiting. Why are we still waiting? Because they're saying we don't have permits. No, acknowledging that we are waiting to be scheduled on the business agenda. Joby doesn't put us on an agenda. I don't know who makes her God being the chair. Okay. Our 3-acre stewardship. We need to be designated that DHHL provides stewardship of our trust lands fronting. I live in the back of the millionaires. How they got all that land, I don't know. But it's there. Plus, they take another 100 feet in front of Anahola Bay. And they get it for nothing. And they get a jacuzzi. They get the beautiful grass. And we cannot use it. So now, we want that. We want that. So we talked to Daryl again. I mean, it's really old. And I'm not going to be, I am negative. I just want you to know that, oh, wait, the KIUC, the most important thing on this. Again, Robin Danner and I, we didn't go solicit. They came to us because the darn department did nothing. And now they kick us off. They want to kick off AHA HCDC, the department, because what? They want the money. We did the work. We did everything that needed to be done. Again, I'm sitting here. I was asked, to come. And like everybody's sitting here, it's not negative. I talked to Joe Tassel, Uncle Joe. He said, we got to listen, but we got to work together to make it work. But you cannot make it work if there's an agency that keeps telling us that the county, the Honolulu, everybody says no need building permits. What do you guys do as senators to help this department to get better? Thank you. Thank you. I'm very passionate because too long. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. At this time, we'll open up for a Q&A from the panel. Any questions from the members? Yes, Senator Madam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad you. My question is, I guess, to Joby. The racetrack, the lease for the racetrack, do they need to comply with the city and county permit requirements?
It's actually a revocable permit, and yes, we do require that they pull permits for that.
So the Grace's testimony was that the dirt was already there, and they're just spreading it around. They're moving it from one place to the other.
So I'm going to ask Daryl to come up, because he's actually even has the specifics of this particular case. Daryl.
Senator, my understanding is that, as he testified, he did bring in 1,500 truckloads of dirt. And though he's moving it around now, he didn't get the original mass grade permit.
Okay, so he did originally bring in 15 truckloads of dirt, and there was no permit for that.
And so that's what the fine from the city is all about.
And he was aware that he needed to get permits.
Yes.
Okay, now this goes back to 2008.
Yes.
Is that initially when he brought in the dirt? And this has been going on since then?
We have had reports of other loads being trucked in to Kalailoa.
Reports, but no documentation?
No, no documentation. But the city has followed up on those complaints as well.
Okay, my other question was the $20,000 in arrears. Mm-hmm. It's $2,000 a month,
yes.
And it's 20 months of...
Yes, right. No, 10 months, 10 months.
10 months of non-payment. This is just last year's non-payment, then?
Yes.
Okay, and they were not issued invoices. I don't know what the department's policy is. I don't get an invoice every month for my mortgage.
Right.
I get,
right.
You know.
Right.
You just know you have to pay it, so I'm not sure. And is there a policy at the DHHL at what time you start looking at revoking a lease for non-payment of rent?
Well, again, we had to walk away through the entire 181 revocable permits that we have. So, again, we've gotten everybody to either talk to us on how they're going to resolve it or even surrender some of their revocable permits. And a lot of they vary in size. Some of the revocable permits that we have, as Chair Masagatani talked about, are short-term in nature and they're more land management. So where some people have a homestead lease, we might give them another 100 feet on the back end that'll help us create a fire break. So some of them have decided, oh, if it's going to cost me money to do it, I had it for free, but if it's going to cost me money to actually obtain insurance to indemnify the department, then I'm going to surrender it back. That's the kind of things that we're having.
I need a little bit more help understanding the whole issue because they started with March of 2008.
I
guess the history started.
Yes.
Is that when they were granted the lease?
They were granted the revocable permit in 2007.
Okay. So
August of 2007.
Up until about 10 or 12 months ago, they were paying their monthly rent. What happened?
Well, my understanding is rent has been an issue throughout the term. So pay some, don't pay some, you know, catch up, don't catch up.
Okay. I'm assuming that some of these issues are business related, and if he can't grade his track, then he can't open it for use, and, you know, working through that. So has that been some of the issues in your...
Well, again, where he's asked for consideration, we've always asked for it to be put in writing. We haven't received anything.
Okay, so you're asking them to put things in writing. Has that ask been done in writing?
When we've met face-to-face, for example, one thing was they were considering a beer garden. Our proposal, my suggestion to them was put it in writing so we can take it to the commission so we can understand what your security is like, where the beer garden is going to be located, what are you looking at. We have not received that proposal.
Okay, so my question, though, is did you put in writing your requests?
No, I responded. It was a verbal request, so I responded face-to-face.
So my recommendation would be when you do these face-to-face meetings, you may want to do written notes and send them copies because it was very difficult for me to follow back and forth.
Okay.
It was he said, she said, and I didn't know who he and she was at some point during the conversation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Solomon.
Oh, thank you very much.
Mahalo nui.
Does the department have any kind of understanding with the city and county of Honolulu in terms of executing permits?
Yes. So, but it is an area that needs further clarification. So essentially,
because I think this is the pilikia. Because, what happens is, GHHL is requiring even on your homesteading programs, even your residential homes, that you have to go and you have to get a permit from the city and county, no matter what island it is. And I know, because I went through the experience with my mama's homestead. And then after I hire an architect, you know, I do all my plans, I get it all going, you know, I'm expending thousands of dollars. And then when I go to the public works and Hilo, I get a stamp on my thing that says, okay, you're in compliance, you know, with all of county regulations, which is important, because then that will trigger my home insurance, you know, and that will also trigger my hookup, my public utilities hookup, and also will, which is electricity and waste. Yeah. Okay, now, however, on that stamp, I go, however, the county is not responsible. So, right then and there, I'm kind of looking at this and going, you know, what is going on? Okay? You know, I think that there has to be some kind of understanding, you know, with the department and the public works departments of every county about your projects. Now, I know for a fact, because, you know, we've done a lot of other projects, that for this racetrack, you know, they would have to have an engineering, you know, they needed an engineer to come in and actually do their schematics. Are you kind of informing your, you know, your persons now, you know, because I know you inherited a lot of this. You know, this was done by the previous administration, and I understand that. But, you know, there's kind of like a little sheet, yeah, that kind of goes with it. And, you know, to inform your beneficiary, your beneficiaries, or whomever, you know, you're leasing the island to, that these are requirements. You know, that you've got to get an engineering schematic, you know, and I was looking through all of their mana'o, and I don't think that was accomplished, maybe because they didn't realize it. I think that by law, and I'm not mistaken, because I was a member of the Consumer Affair Committees for years, you know, truckers have a responsibility. Like when they're hauling dirt, they got to notify where they're dumping that LEPO, whether or not it's contaminated or not. You know, that's a trucker's responsibility, because they're supposed to go, and even if they are using any kind of recycled materials, that they need some kind of verification from wherever they're picking it up, that that is aerated property and it is not contaminated. So I don't know if they realize that the trucker is really responsible for that, and I don't know if you're appraised of that. And then the other thing, I was looking at their insurance policy, you know, which is okay, but it says that this insurance policy is under the laws of the state of Nevada. You know, I don't know if this insurance policy is applicable in Hawaii, because in consumer affairs, you know, all insurances that are that where you get your insurances from has to be in compliance with the laws of the state of Hawaii. So, you know, these are the kind of areas that I think these are logistical, technical, and they're complicated, you know. That's why big businesses hire consultants whenever they do a project. You know, they hire consultants, and those consultants go out and they make sure X, Y, and Z is completed, you know, which maybe that would behoove your department, you know, to possibly hire somebody in your land management, you know, that has those expertise. Because I do agree, and because I was very much part of the movement, that we do want to see our Hawaiian people be able to benefit from their assets. And what is happening in here, as I've been listening to all of the parties' grievances, you know, that they seem to feel that they are being disenfranchised from, you know, their assets. And I don't think that's point on. Because, you know, we have worked really long and hard, and Senator He, myself, and I think Senator Slow, you know, we've been here the longest, you know, where there has been a very, a diligent effort expended by this legislature to allow the Hawaiian people to really become a player in terms of being able to participate and manage their fiscal assets. Now, if I may, Madam Chairman, just one more thing. Now, this is my personal memo, and I've championed this for 30 years since I was the Office of Hawaiian Affairs Trustee way back in 1982, that if you look at the Act is doomed to fail. Because the Act, what the Act does is that the Act disallows the Hawaiian people to use their land base as an asset. Like, for example, you know, which is very different from our state leases. Now, when I take a state lease, which we have from DLNR, you know, whether it's an agricultural lease, whether it's a commercial lease, I'm allowed to use that aina as an asset. So I can go to the banks, I can, you know, be able to mortgage that land because that land has value. See, DHHL, the Act does not allow the Hawaiian people to do it. So right then and there, I think in my mind, you know, it's a very difficult situation. Like the Hawaiians cannot even go and get a home equity line from American Savings Bank to renovate their homes. And why is that? Because the aina, you cannot use the aina as an asset. So the only thing that you can possibly use is are the improvements. You know, and unfortunately, most banks in this state are very conservative. You know, and any kind of collateral that is used, it's very difficult for you to use your improvements as collateral unless you're well established. You know, unless you're well established. It's almost, you'll always get denied, you know. So I think the situation is that, you know, we're asking, although these are really great ideas, but we're not providing the proper financial, you know, capabilities or abilities or support for us to, for the beneficiaries or whomever is leasing these commercial lands that are Hawaiian, giving them the opportunities to be able to come up with some kind of financial management portfolio that can support these projects. Now, I normally don't get too involved because I don't think it's my kuleana. I'm a policymaker. You know, I'm not a, you know, an administrator that kind of gets really involved with you know, of what was shared with us today. But in defense, you know, of the information that was shared, you know, I think that there has to be, to me, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. I think there's a lot of where people are not understanding what the department is capable of doing and capable of not doing. What is really the kuleana of the city, you know, in terms of the permitting. I think there's a lot of miscommunication on that. And then I don't know about the financial capabilities of these projects as to what are the expectations of those that are getting involved. So these are serious, you know, and I really don't know how to kind of resolve that, you know, unless, because you're kind of in that situation. You know, you cannot use your assets like other trusts can. You know, like Kamehameha Schools can use all of their land assets, you know, to really get the kind of dollars that are required to really uplift, you know, their programs. And I think a lot of that is inherent in the Act. Now, we had discussed this in great length with Senator Danny Noy when he was here. And this is when Mike Crozier was the chairman of the Hawaiian Affairs Committee. So this is an area that we're very much aware of, and because of that peculiar situation that we're in, you know, with the what's inherent in the Act, this is why this was kind of all put together, you know, to allow us to kind of deal with the realities of what is there at the federal Act, unless the Hawaiian people really want to lobby Washington and start to dismantle the Act. You know what I'm saying? That's policy. That's what we're involved in. Mm-hmm. This is why this was all put in place as a way of kind of coping, you know, with the realities of what we're dealing with. And it really takes a lot of out-of-the-box thinking. And it takes a lot of creative financing. And it really takes a lot of empowerment you know, to the communities if they're willing to really participate. But then it also takes finite details, you know, of what those expectations are, how we can help from the state side, how the federal government can help, you know, to put projects together in terms of giving you the dollars, yeah, to be able to move forward. So, because this is just the tip of the iceberg, and, you know, and I'm sure many, many. So, you know, that's my recommendation. Because I think what was shared here today is all solvable. You know, if people are willing to sit down, if you kind of really know what your problem is, because we're getting involved with too many details that is a culmination of the systemic problem, which is you're dealing with county state permits, you're dealing with health DOH permits, you're dealing with all of these permits. Like, I think a project that the Grace family is endeavoring, and I want to congratulate you, it's huge. You know, in reality, I think you'd have to have maybe 20 to 25 different permits, you know, if they really were to do it. Okay, I'm going. And thank you very much. But that was a 30-year mana'o condensed down. Since I felt everybody got 15 minutes, you know, I should get 15.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you
very much.
Yes, thank you. May I ask you a few questions?
Yes,
Senator. You know, I'm referring to this letter dated October 23rd, 2001.
The commission action.
Yes. What, you know, I don't... I read the letter by Mike McElroy. I guess
yes.
You were deputy at that time, yeah?
Yes. I believe Ray was the... either Ray was the chair or he was the head of the land management division and Kali was the chair.
I read the letter and I read it several times. I don't understand, though, even at face value, why the Hawaiian Homes Commission would rescind the general leasing policy to give Native Hawaiians preference, even on the face of it. I read everything. I read his arguments, but it doesn't, to me, suggest, for example, on page 2, I don't know, do you have it in front of you?
Yes,
okay.
I do have it.
On the first paragraph, as part of the argument McElroy makes to you folks, it says that provides the lease rent shall be based on the land's appraised value. Therefore, the statute prevents the department from leasing to Native Hawaiians at a below market rent.
Yes.
Why would the department conclude, therefore, we should rescind it, as opposed, therefore, we should ask the legislature or ask our congressional delegation, whichever is appropriate. In this case, he refers to HRS, so I presume it's us. Why you would not ask the legislature to provide a remedy to allow Native Hawaiians a preference, as opposed to... Therefore, then conclude that all things being equal, to rescind the preference.
So, with regard to that specific question, let me just put it in a context that there were several issues that were at play at the time in which the decision was made. Probably most critical was the potential litigation in moving forward with a preference policy for the general leasing program, that it could expose the trust to, and to significant challenges that it was facing with regard to the Barrington Inter lawsuits. In terms of this, why would we not come forward to ask for an adjustment in the preference policy to allow for an adjustment in the economic rent? I can only assume, because we didn't have that conversation. I think at that time, the hope was that if we looked at other mechanisms to shore up our businesses, that they would be more competitive. Because the actual experience was that the Native Hawaiian businesses that were on the general leasing program at the time, it was a closed bid process, and for whatever reason, they were bidding higher with this closed bid process for the land rents than what was happening with the open bid process, and it was causing the businesses not to succeed, and so they were failing at higher rates on the homelands at that particular time. So it may have been with the way the policy was implemented at that time. One of the challenges of adjusting the rent and allowing for a Native Hawaiian to bid less than fair market is it does put, and this is a constant tension for the commission, which is the need to balance the interests of the entire trust and all the beneficiaries against the interests of a single beneficiary or a small group of beneficiaries. So the commission has begun to bring this issue forward again, to re-dialogue about the implementation of the preference policy, looking at whether the preference policy applies in the case or could apply in the case of revocable permits. So, you know, it is the statutory authority still resides in the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, the ability to implement a policy. At this time, we just don't have one.
Okay. Let me respond this way. Insofar as a legal challenge, you agree with me that this policy was adopted through a Constitutional Convention in 1978.
Yes.
Okay.
The authority, yes.
So any legal challenge would be whether the Constitution was in fact constitutional, yeah?
We were concerned about the constitutional challenges that continue against the whole trust, which are at the U.S. constitutional level, the 14th Amendment challenges, that the program is unconstitutional in terms of being, providing unconstitutional preference on a race basis. So the whole issues that are occurring as it relates to all of our home trusts.
But I hope you concede to me that your duty as a bureaucrat is to execute your duty, as opposed to challenge those issues that may be contrary to the beneficiaries you serve. In other words, if somebody there's nothing to preclude anyone from challenging the constitutionality of any amendment before, but that's not your fight to have. That's for the state of Hawaii to fight. Now you may weigh in, but until such time as a legal any threat of legal action is just that, a threat. I just don't see it that way. I mean, the way I read this letter, it sounds to me, it takes on the appearance that the Hawaiian Homes Commission is being served by the department with some logic or illogic, depending on your perspective, of removing the preference to Native Hawaiians. From my perspective as a Native Hawaiian, I say bring it on. You want to challenge us? Challenge us. Because the Constitution is clear. And the Constitution, I would remind you, was amended by a body that the majority of which were not Hawaiian. The chairman was Bill Patey. So I don't understand that logic. But anyway, I leave that there. And then, you know, I don't know Solomon's senator's question, but I want to try give it to you in a yes/no answer. Are you required? Are the lessees that like Grace and Raposo, are they required to have? Is it the department's position that they must have something in writing with a permit? And your answer, if I ask that, let's take Kauai, for DPP on Kauai, that he would say they cannot proceed without a permit, and you would say yes, that's true, they cannot proceed, that we would get the same answers?
I will answer the question in saying yes, we do require permits.
Whether from the county, though.
From the county, yes. The department's position would be, yes, you require permits. When you do activity on the homelands, yes, you require permits.
A county permit.
A county permit.
From DPP.
Yes, from
and
DPP.
DPP feels the same way. They would answer the question the same way.
I can't speak for DPP, and that's the issue of clarification and problem that we've had, and we're trying to clarify. Yes, I think now in the county of Kauai, they would say, yes, they need a permit. So this issue of clarification between our agency and the counties is critical, because our position is that our jurisdiction has to do with land use. When it comes to the building permits, we ask that the lessees and others pull that from the county. We're working that clarification at the leadership level so that it's consistent, because there's a misunderstanding in some of the counties as to what authorities, you know, we look to them for with regard to permits.
And is your answer based on a policy driven by the commissioners of the department, or a rule driven by the administrators of the department, or a personal opinion?
it's not a personal opinion. When it comes to, based on, in having this conversation both with staff and both with our council, as it relates to permits, that's a jurisdiction that has to do with health and safety.
No, no, but I'm asking if you have something in writing that supports your position.
I believe we do, but in terms of that, in terms of, yes, I believe we do, and can make that available to the committee.
Is that a rule or a policy driven by the commission or opinion driven by the
attorney? I think it's a guidance from our attorney general, but I need to clarify.
Can you make that available?
Yes, I can make that available to the committee.
Sorry to Dominic. Thank you.
No. Well, just as a follow-up to those questions, if that's the case that DHHL, feels that you always need permits, why would Mike Akane put in writing that he's exempting the racetrack from permits? But why did he initially tell them that you're fine, you can just, and then the RP even said they can bring materials in, whatever's reasonably necessary to do their plans for all these extensive racetracks. Why would the head of DHHL put in writing to them that they're exempt?
So there is the ability to exempt. The department does have the ability to exempt from, the permitting process. But when it relates, it does so. Let me just clarify on that.
Okay.
If it's driven by a rule.
As it relates to that particular, why Micah took that position in terms of the exemption and rescinded it later, we'd have to go back and look at the file specifically as to why that happened. But I think our position going forward and our position at this time is, as it relates to the lessees, we do require that they pull permits. Now, the department does have the ability to determine the land uses on its lands. And in determining that land use, that jurisdiction, we do try to match our land use designation as closely as we can to the county designations within the particular counties. When it comes to the permission or the building code application, that's where we ask the counties or the lessees to go to the counties to pull those building permits, because we do not have the ability internally to provide that regulatory authority as it relates to the health and safety, which is what the building permit and the building codes are all about. On occasion, very rarely, do we say, okay, we're going to exempt from these codes, and it's only usually for DHHL related projects, and they're usually significant. There's only it's the exception and not the rule. So the only time that I know of in recent history where that's happened on a big scale has to do with the Target development on the island of Kauai, in which we have a memorandum as it relates to the application of our land use and the building permits. It's definitely an area that requires greater clarification with the counties and also at the individual lessee level, because when they come up to the counter to be addressed by the clerk at the county, they're getting misinformation. So that's something that we are definitely working towards with each of the counties.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, this was something that happened prior to you being the head. It was Mike Akane. It's a problem that you inherited, and that's what makes it so difficult for the situation you're in today. There is something in the law called detrimental reliance. It's a statute where, if you are told by a government agency and something that is reliable, you are told something. And then based on that information, you rely on that information, and then you start to take actions. And then later on, that government entity or whatever it is says, oh, we made a mistake, we're rescinding, what do we do? then the person who's agreed, the victim in this situation, you know, there's a remedy, you know, that can be done where, you know, the person detrimentally relied on that government entity and took those actions that they did, and therefore there should be some remedy for that aggrieved person. You know, and that's, I think why we're here today. You know, I mean, I think if any of us got a letter from Mike Akane, the head of DHHL, saying, go ahead, you know, go ahead with your racetrack plans, you know, everything's fine, you're exempt, to then later on get it rescinded, you know, I think it's reasonable for someone to feel as if they've been wronged, you know, and that there was, that they detrimentally relied and they had the right to rely on something. And I know it wasn't you that did the letter. That's what makes it so difficult. So I just don't know if is there any way that in a situation where there was detrimental reliance like this, I mean, is there some kind of remedy where we could grandfather them in for, you know, all the investments they already made, the plans they already did, and that type, you know, instead of going back and, you know, rescinding something that he had the right to rely on.
We can look at it, but we would need to discuss it further to see what the options would be as it relates to that and those issues.
Oh, and I think the community would really appreciate that, you know. And, you know, it's because it's a problem that, you know, the wheels started going already, you know, and then so it makes it hard, really hard to go back now. And I don't know if that's part of the confusion with the county, is maybe the county, because of that letter from Mike Akane, felt that they don't really, at this point, that DHHL has exempted them. So maybe that's where the confusion lies.
Yes, I think what the record that Daryl had laid out was, there was, I think, an attempt over and over again by the part of the department to clarify what its position was with the county and with the Graces as it relates to this desire for permitting. The revocable permit that they're operating under, in fact, it's not a revocable permit, it's a right of entry, because we no longer have a revocable. Why don't you come up?
Rather than canceling them outright, we just kept them in a holdover status, kind of like a 30-day revolving until we can get them to a point where we can get them to a transitional right of entry. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are at this point. So there is no documentation. What people have done and what the other accounts have done, the 181, they have paid us on time. Mm-hmm. We put that on the side, and when we process their documents, we cash the checks.
So what you're saying, there's no... at this point, there's no written agreement between you and
no.
So how does he know what his duties
are? Well, they did receive letters from us explaining to them what they needed to do.
Okay.
So.
But in his revocable permit that he was given initially, he was told he could bring a reasonable amount of materials in, whatever materials he needed.
But the other
he could bring in.
But the other part was, before you brought the dirt in, you needed to get prior approval from the department.
But he'd gotten the approval from Mike Akane.
We did.
I mean, he got an initial exemption and approval from Mike Akane.
Can I ask?
Yes. This revocable permit was revoked by Mike Akane, rescinded in October. Not the revocable permit.
The letter to DPP.
The letter regarding that they needed permits to...
Right. It was officially rescinded, but I think it was verbally rescinded in February, if I read the account correctly.
Correct. So I guess that's where I'm confused. Are you saying to forgive everything from here going back, or just at the point that they knew they were supposed to comply?
I mean, well, I think, you know, under detrimental reliance, I mean, typically, you know, the victim is made whole, you know, because if the government agency told them something, and based on that they took significant actions, which they definitely did in this case, the remedy that's usually asked for is to make the person whole, you know, to go back to what was initially promised. But, yeah, so I mean, that's what the hope is, but of course, you know, I know that's, so you're willing to sit down with them to try to see if something can be worked out?
We can see what the options are in terms of what the department can do going forward at this point. I think as Senator Kidani had mentioned, as our record had shown, the position that Chair Kane, I guess, articulated in that letter was rescinded,
and the position going forward was that permits were required. So we need to look at, and I think that's been our position since then consistently, including the current revocable permit slash holding pattern that this particular tenant is in. And so what I'm saying is we'd have to look at what the options are, what options we have. You know, we always, with all of our revocable permit or former revocable permit tenants that have been in non-compliance, our goal is to try to work with them. This is just one issue. There is the issue of the soils. There is the issue of the non-payment. So, you know, our goal is to try to work with them as much as we can to try to bring them into compliance.
But it, so it sounds like you do have some ability to exempt certain permits, then, and you've done it for other some possible other projects.
As the chair had described, it's primarily projects for DHHL, not on behalf of somebody else.
So what's the difference? What puts DHHL at a higher level than everybody else? I mean, this thing takes on the appearance that this personality driven, right or wrong. It just takes this idea that something is granted, new administration, rescinded. Whatever reason. It takes on the appearance that exemptions are for the department, but exemptions don't apply to whoever you giving a permit to. And that's why I asked. You know, if you sat here and said, okay, well, let me read you the policy adopted by the commission. Or let me read you the advice given by the Attorney General. And even then, I would argue that's advice that until adopted by the commission is merely advice. And so I'm a little flummoxed that we're relying on information you're not providing in writing. Okay. Can I switch gears?
Yes.
Okay. You folks are familiar with Nelson, right?
Yes.
Okay. No question about that, right? So, you agree with me then that Nelson said for non-homesteading purposes, the revenue generated shall not be used for what would be used normally for A funds in the budget.
We have, our council is advised differently. And so as you know, with Nelson, there are three different parties. There's ourselves, there's the state, and there are the plaintiffs represented by NHLC. So in bringing that question forward to our council, which is not the state attorney general, did not come to that same conclusion.
Okay. Who's your council?
Watanabe Inn, Kawashima, Mel Miyagi, and Brian Kang.
And they provided that in writing to you?
That was a verbal question that was had in executive session. That's a guidance between our council and the commission.
But it's not in writing.
We can seek it in writing.
How would you rely on something that's verbal? I mean, how would you support something in a court of law that's not in writing? I mean, you can see why. Now we get into the legislative arena, because the question is that reasonably people would conclude, and I'm one of them, that as a result of Nelson, what is spent for administrative purposes and what is spent for the benefit of Native Hawaiians is a bright line drawn by Nelson. You've taken an in-between case by Watanabe Ing that is verbal. How would we, when we do the budget for Hawaiian Homes, my position is whatever funds have accrued, and in this case, in for by this report, this is June 2012, almost $14 million was accrued by non-homesteading purposes. My position, that should go to the benefit of the homesteader, not the administration. And if the administration wants to put $14 million in, then it should be done so through the governor's ask. You folks feel differently about this?
No, we don't feel differently. We actually, the question that you asked me was whether or not the Nelson case prevents us from using general leasing revenues for A funds. But in terms of the position that you've just articulated, I can speak for myself. It's not a position we've discussed at the commission table. But I'm in wholehearted agreement with you. if we can achieve sufficient funding from the legislature for our A costs, our operating and administration, absolutely, the funds generated off of our available lands should go through the to the other three purposes, which is lots, loans, and rehabilitation projects. The challenge is that our ask for sufficiency, I think this year, is about $27 million. The governor has asked for 15 in his budget approximately. We received 9.6 from the legislature. Your support to get a sufficiency, as the commission defines it, is absolutely essential for us to achieve the mission and operations of the department. So I actually agree with you, and I hope that you can help us achieve that funding level of sufficiency of nearly $27, $28 million, which is our ask.
And so then the follow-up question is, and if the legislature declines to meet your ask, is it your position, therefore, then that these non-homesteading revenue generated goes into to make up the A funding funds that may not have been provided by the legislature, or are there other remedies?
That is that particular question as to if the legislature does not provide that sufficient funding for us is a decision that the commission is going to have to deliberate as to what happens to those general lease. I mean those. Revenues generated off of the non-homestead lands and the allocation against the four purposes.
See, in fact, we disagree, Rob, Jovi, because you have taken a position that if, in fact, A funds are not sufficient in your view, provided by the legislature, that this money comes into play. My position is if the legislature or any other ask does not provide, in your opinion, sufficient funds, these monies are off limits provided by Nelson. We don't agree.
So therein is why it's critical that there's different counsel in this case.
Therein is why it's critical that when you represent issues before this committee provided by a lawyer, without it in writing, becomes a very difficult issue to reconcile because it's verbal. And, you know, this is not new. So it's not in our interest, our collective interest, to be discussing things that are verbal and not in writing. Nelson is in writing. It's right here.
Sure.
We may disagree how to interpret it, but to the effect we may disagree, I would expect you to give me something in writing.
We can do that, Senator. I can speak to our counsel to provide that analysis that doesn't compromise.
And still, I would assert that that is an opinion that has not been. I take it you, if I understand you correctly, that has not been adopted by your commissioners. Is that accurate?
We have not taken an official position on it.
Well, you don't have a position.
Well, we just discussed, the original question was okay. Regarding the use of general leases.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Joby. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You have a question? Okay. All the speakers, so this is not Q&A. Okay. I actually just wanted to make one more comment on this issue. I do agree with Senator Shimabukuro, Chair Shimabukuro, on this issue about what was originally said by the former chair of DHHL. And I guess my concern is I don't know what the timeline is before that was rescinded. In writing, maybe 9 months, and verbally, maybe a month. So I guess that's part of the issue. My question is, fines we are talking about are not DHHL fines. These are county fines.
Yes.
So we cannot waive those. It's up to the county.
My understanding is yes.
Do you know how much, what is the amount?
$121,000.
Okay. So it's not within our purview to say, we can make that go away. As there... I guess once we decide that maybe we should try and help relieve this burden that may have been caused on our part by statements made by former DHHL directors, maybe one thing you guys might look at as an option is asking the city to waive the portion of the fines that happened in the period of time when they thought they did not need the permit. Okay. Going forward, I do not believe we should waive permit conditions because the reason the county has them is way beyond what we are aware of, whether it has to do with contaminated soil and all those other
issues that we would, I think, be liable for because we waived the need for them, you know, right. In future uses of the land. So, you know, I just wanted to state that up front.
Thank you, sir.
But I also had questions of Sword.
Yes, yes.
Sword.
Please, yes. Mr. Grace?
My question for Mr. Grace basically is, having heard what I just said, have you asked the city and county to waive the fines based on what was previously told you back in 2008?
Well, we didn't quite ask them to waive. What we did was met with the inspectors, and pretty much they were the ones that shed the light on, we can give you the fine, we can make you get the permit, but we still know what jurisdiction. So when Micah left, this is where a lot of cloudy stuff stayed. When Micah left, we tried to bring this discussion about the...
You're saying the city and county inspectors told you they do not have jurisdiction over DHHLN?
Yes.
Do you have that in writing?
No. Only from the sign guy, the sign department. That he couldn't.
I'm talking about the sign. I'm
yeah.
talking.
But it's the same department. It's the same planning and permitting department.
No. But that's a different issue.
No, I understand. I understand.
You know, I'm going to get a different.
Exactly.
A different fine if I put up a fence.
Hang on.
If I put up a fence without a permit, then
exactly.
If I build a whole new addition to my house without a permit.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
But when he told us that, when we went back to the agency, that's when Micah left. So we had to deal with Kalana Park. And we couldn't get to Kalana Park. We had to deal with Linda. And our land manager was Kale Young.
Okay.
And at that point was, not because somebody else got away with it, you can. That was my first slap of discrimination. So
I actually don't disagree with that, Mr. Grace, because you do have to start someplace in making sure that laws are followed.
Oh, exactly.
So I understand, you know, I'm trying to help you.
No, I understand, but...
I just want to know, do you have anything in writing or, you know, documented? If that was said, then it gives us some...
Yes,
some
to
go back and...
I'm leading to something that you can sink your teeth in, but I want you to understand how we get into this point so that you can really understand why I'm frustrated. Through the policy, working with them, working with land managers, working with land agents, over and over and over again, we never got back to the point of discussing, really, oh shit, you know, that was a letter of exemption, till Michelle was involved. Then when she left, we had to deal all over again. So our frustration kept going over and over and over again. While all this is going on, our land agent, and Land Division, Linda says, even if it was before, this is our new policies now, you gotta follow. Okay, all right. Then they allow one paintball field to be built bigger than my property with zero permits. So we look at that and it's like, what the hell is going on, right? So we go and investigate. I bought aerial shots of Barbara's Point. I took the tax map keys, paid one lady that's all she does, is permit running, go to the city and investigate who's got permits. Nobody's got permits. Not a single person on DHHL land in Barbara's Point has a permit to do anything except the solar farm company that just put up their nice little solar farm. So, you tell me one thing here. No, it's in the past.
So
we're going to change policies.
Do you have something in writing from the county that says
yes.
there was a report or a complaint
yes,
to the county of this paintball operation.
Yeah. So they forced them to try to go get permits now after the fact. But the same land manager and same land division tell me one thing and go 4 miles down the road and let somebody else do something else.
Yeah.
So
they have documentation that the DHHL gave them permission to proceed without permits.
Ask Michelle Kahani, she's right here.
I'm asking for documentation.
Yes,
she's
we
no
do.
Longer with the department.
No, we do, ma'am. And we do.
How can you provide the documentation to this community?
Yes, I can.
Yes. Okay, leading up to that, okay, parcel nine, Barbara's Point property, the jurisdiction of Hawaiian Homelands, has a new tenant that just came in just a few months ago, Road and Highway Builders. Close construction. They import from Canada 55,000 cubic yards of dirt every 3 months. I mean, gravel every 3 months. They don't even permit. Close Construction sent a permit to the city with their application and a check to get a permit for their operation, and it
so
was
they
returned.
Don't need a permit.
No, wait, it was returned. The city returned their application and their check with a letter saying, we don't have jurisdiction. So,
over Hawaiian Homestead Land.
So, how much more documentation do you really need to see that this is personality driven, as Mr. He said, this is preference over permits?
You know, I don't do this full time, so I'm just telling
no,
you.
I understand.
I have questions and I just want them answered. So, all I'm asking if there is documentation. So, if you have that letter, could we please?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I will forward you that.
Actually, second question. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. In your book.
Okay. Well, what under what exhibit?
Is that? There's a, I think it's April 25th, I believe.
What exhibit? It's a.
It should be in the table.
It's over a page long. I mean, it's thick, and I just got it.
Just to let you know, it is in the book. So there's a letter specifically saying that it was rescinded. Here's your check back. You don't need it. That's
you know.
In the
okay.
Book.
You can tell me later. I forgot what I was going to ask. The payments. Okay. So you're 10 months in arrears. What are you going to do to bring that to...
Bringing that back to current is not a problem. And I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, our utility for the water comes with our rent. So we can generate nothing until we get the bill because we share water.
But you could at least pay your rent, you know.
Exactly. No, exactly. But that's another good point you brought up. We've been hitting the agency to sit down and talk because they put in all this hardship on us and not allowing us to succeed. So we have stopped a lot of events that we've been having because we cannot afford to keep it going. They keep squeezing me. I'm only operating on a small piece of my land.
Okay.
They're not allowing me to use the whole thing.
Thank you, Mr. Grace. Joby, can we ask that you guys either keep them up to date on their billing or arrange some, do an average, a yearly average, and that's what they came up with, and at the end you guys decide are they over or under. I mean, if they have not been receiving invoices, I think that is an issue. Thank you, Mr. Grace.
Thank you.
I want to ask Mr. Grace, so do you have a solution, you know, that you want to propose to try to resolve this issue?
Yes,
so
there's several solutions. One of them is when we met with Michelle was that part of our property is being held back because of some significant possible findings in these bushes. We've provided some data that there's not. We've got more data to give, but we cannot get a meeting to sit down with Hawaiian Homes to discuss this. So they want to take that piece of property away from me. So then when we discussed this with Michelle, it would only cause a problem with the Hawaiian Civic Clubs and we would have to make more humbug. It was suggested that we had relocated off of that property to another property, which was less used, better fit for our recreation, was Parcel 9. And that the tenants was going to be vacating and they could be moved around. That was a solution that we were talking with Leolani Kini, which was provided by the agency. And then when we met with Michelle, that was either what we're going to do. We're going to get the bushes back and piss everybody off, or then we're going to relocate us to another parcel. That was where it ended. Mm-hmm. It ended. We have agreed that we would pick up and relocate with no cost to the state. But there needs to be recognition of the damage that we already suffered.
Okay. Well, my understanding is that the Parcel 9, I think someone else is leasing that one now.
Yeah.
Like a high rent.
Right. So some of the discussion that we had back then was don't interrupt anybody else. There's a lot of area on the property that's not being used. So if we started to use just that, the agency can keep their money. As the park starts to grow, somebody vacates, then we take over a little bit more. We never got an opportunity to discuss this.
And then the bushes area is the part with the Native Hawaiian cultural sites.
Yes.
But now you said that you did get someone from Bishop Museum to do a study.
We had Bishop Museum and we used, Mike, can you come up?
Yeah, sure.
And then can we get a copy of that?
Yes.
Could they put something in writing?
Yes.
It's in the book.
Oh, okay. What? And you gave that to DHHL?
No. Yes.
Yeah, DHHL needs to see that.
That's what we can't get nobody to look at.
It's one of those things where, you know, when we sit down about it, let me just find out where.
So your documentation shows that there are no significant Native Hawaiian things in that bush area. And that area is vacant right now?
Well, actually, what we found basically is that there was a study done specifically for the base realignment closure process for, you know, the, you know, requisition of Barber's Point, you know, that we believe that a majority of, you know, the Kalaeloa Master Development Plan was based off of, you know, I mean, the Navy paid a certified archaeological expert to go in and do a study on the archaeological and historical sites in that area. Okay. Now, what he did was that was Memorial Tuggle and M.J. Tuggle, and that is in here. I can't remember where it's at exactly specifically, but the documentation is in here in a brief. And basically what it states is that there were three parts on that lower portion of the property that were identified. It was 1747, which is a sinkhole site, three sites in the south, very southern portion, middle portion of the property. There's one called 50, I don't want to get into it, but there's two other sites basically. And we found actually there was a time period where we were struggling back and forth, wasting time over this site, actually, that the Hawaiian Civic Clubs and DHGL were saying that we can't use it all, we're going to have to take that away from you because of the fact that it's got Native Hawaiian, it was used as a Native Hawaiian meeting area, gathering place, and all the good stuff. We found documentation recently that stated that it was a grenade range, which is something we suggested it was all along, but we didn't have the proof. And so basically, there's only one site really that's of significant finding. They're all rated for information potential D for the National Registrar, and there's only one that is of Hawaiian possibly Hawaiian significance and stated for data recovery. So this land, our problem is this documentation, this study was issued by the Navy. Somebody in Hawaii Community Development Authority or DHGL should have had this information. We don't know anything about this stuff, but yet we were able to find what these things are and who did the study for them. And that caused great harm to us. We spent literally a year and a half or more dealing with not having that property and not being able to use it for the construction of our facility. And it really did put us back a large amount of ways. And that's just kind of one of the problems that we came into with the facility. Okay. Did I answer the original question?
Okay, well, I don't know if this is something. Have you seen Exhibit 3?
We don't have a copy of that.
Could you give this to DHGL? And just, I hope it's something that maybe you could take a look at DHGL, and if there's a way that the racetrack could use that bush's area that was originally in their permit, right, then that would really help to make you whole. So I don't know if that's something that's, you know, that would be really good to consider that.
That would help a lot. You know, or to sit down and have positive discussion to some kind of resolution would help a whole lot. Yeah. I would really appreciate that.
Could I say just something? Just, I mean, I'm,
okay,
you know,
brief, yeah.
I will.
Four sessions.
I've been in this helping Mr. Grace for a long while since the original. Mr. Kitchen. So I originally supposed to be on the panel, but I've been doing this for a while, and pretty much what happened in the initial beginning is because of the exemption letter that we received, right? We invested a large amount of effort into getting the park started. Mm-hmm. From getting that letter rescinded, from that point on, what happened was a series of setbacks, one after another, that basically contributed to the situation that we're in right now. And that's basically the gist of the problem that happened with this. Mr. Grace is extremely, he's been through a lot. I'm coming in from a different perspective slightly because I can kind of see this. I mean, this whole thing has been just one setback to another because of that initial thing. And it's also, I mean, we spent a year, for example. We spent a year trying to get a permit after we told that we could bring everything in. He tried everything he could to try and get a permit. And the only thing that stopped us was we couldn't get a bond because we didn't expect this burden. You know?
And well, I think it would be really helpful if you gave one of these packets to DHHL. I don't know, hopefully you did. If you have any extra, or you can take mine.
No, I got
yeah, so okay. So they can see what it is, your documentation is extremely helpful, the journey you've been through.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's, I mean, there's a lot of, there's thousands, literally thousands of people waiting for this.
And we did, you know, I did get a lot of letters of support, and I did get some opposition as well. And so there is some on both sides, but a lot of support letters. So any other questions? Do we have the resolution? We should touch briefly on that. Yeah, you know, possibly there was a resolution that was submitted to our committee for consideration, calling on forming possibly a task force to look at this, the issues of revocable permits and licenses and general leases, and whether there could be improvements made. But you know, it needs to be vetted much more, and we need to make sure that all the stakeholders are on. If this is going to pass at all, that all stakeholders are there that represent all the different perspectives. And so we will circulate that proposed resolution to all interested stakeholders, and it hasn't been introduced or anything yet. It needs a lot more work. The other comments, closing comments, but yeah, we have a floor session, but I do hope that we can do some kind of follow-up.
I think part of the follow-up, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, is that DHHL might want to touch bases with the city. If they don't feel they don't have authority on DHHL land, I think it's important for you guys to know this going forward. It seems to me like it wasn't clear, because in 2008 they were asking for permitting, you know, permits, and they gave him fines, and now they're saying they're not.
But can we get that in writing from the city to
her? We're
asking the discussion to be held. And yeah, it should be in writing, yes.
What we'll do is the chair of the committee will write a letter to each county planning director to ask for their jurisdiction with respect to Hawaiian homelands. Because I am quite certain it's different on Kauai and it's different on Maui.
And on the Big Island.
And on the Big Island. And this thing is a catch-as-catch-can type of discussion we had this morning.
Okay, so now that we're here, moving forward, we don't know who our land manager is. Who are we going to sit down and work with? And I'm a little scared about that, because some people don't tell the truth over there. It's personality-driven. What are we going to do, Mr. Heath?
My best guess is the department will keep the chairman of the chair of the committee apprised and be able to at least monitor. She obviously has an interest in your project.
Thank you.
Because we did get some commitment from DHHL to try to sit down with you and try to see if something can be worked out. And so I definitely look forward to hearing from you and from DHHL as to whether, you know, to the results of that meeting. And hopefully that this hearing brought to light some things, and you were able to document your concerns for DHHL and for us to see. So, yeah.
And not only for us, but, you know, for everything that was said here today, there's other people that are struggling that don't know how to come here and don't know where to go for help, you know. Shouldn't there be a place in DHHL, or shouldn't you have a website that people could come to get help or know how to get the help?
Let me respond this way. There was an earlier suggestion to have an oversight hearing every session.
Oh, very good.
By one of the previous speakers. Probably good advice.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We have to adjourn for our floor session, but thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
What did you want to
There's a missing link here. It's the commission who is the deciding body of anything having to do with the air. You're not here. Jody represents the department.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Thank you.